Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Attracting Hypersonics and hosted by me, James Gerd, and Paul Rogers. Warm welcome if it's your first episode. We put a lot of time and effort into creating the content. Help us to keep the podcast free for everyone. Refer us to people in your network, let them know we exist. Share our posts on social media. We post a lot on LinkedIn and Twitter. And the biggest thing you can do to help us is rate our show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you're listening, watching. It really helps boost visibility. So thanks, and we hope you enjoy our latest episode. And our topic today is about, you know, what does a winning return strategy look like and getting underneath the technology of Loop Returns. We're joined by CEO Jonathan Pomer. He's also the founder, and it's a market-leading returns platform used by a lot of brands. And I know a number of Paul's clients use it. So Jonathan, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to start by giving everyone a bit of an introduction to yourself, and for those who haven't worked with Loop, for what Loop is?
Yeah, absolutely. James, Paul, thanks so much for having me today. Thinking about how I introduce myself. A father of two kiddos. My daughter Kate will be 6 in August, and my son James will be 2 in July. I've been married to my wife Whitney for about 13 years. Based in Columbus, Ohio, was just, you know, mentioning to the two of you before we hopped on the recording, you know, I've been in the Shopify ecosystem really for the last decade, been in e-com for the last decade and some digital and boutique consulting prior to that. But in 2013, replatformed an omni-channel direct-to-consumer brand to Shopify Plus. In 2014, I started one of the first Shopify Plus agencies. And in 2016, 2017, weird founding story and timing and all that jazz. But we spun Loop out of custom software that we built at Rocket Code into its own company. And we've been building that business since 2017. Loop. We've got about 2,500 merchants on the platform. They're doing about $45 billion in annual sales. We're processing almost 2 million returns per month. And what Loop is in the merchant-facing world, the category is called returns management. And in the reverse logistics world, it's sort of called returns initiation. But essentially, it's a white-labeled portal branded to the experience our merchants offer their shoppers. That makes returning and exchanging items you bought online easy. If honestly offline now as well. So I have to get used to saying that you can return items you bought offline with Loop these days as well. But we build an experience that feels a lot like shopping to make sure the shopper has a great experience. We make it easy. We help shift refunds to exchanges. We help optimize shipping and reverse logistics and sort of 3PL costs. And you know, what we've seen and what really has been at the core of why merchants should do this is, you know, whether the shopper gets, whether they do exchange or they get a refund, what we see in the tens of millions of returns we've processed is that regardless of the outcome, even if the outcome is a refund, giving shoppers a great and seamless and simple experience yields a higher repeat purchase rate and a higher lifetime value, so that those customers you pay to acquire are valuable and come back more and more often.
Great. I think we'll dig into some of those areas a bit more, particularly the exchange piece later on. So first question, so what's the typical role of Loop for a brand or retailer? And how does the average user journey look for the customer or the end customer? And then lastly, how does the integration work for the average implementation?
Yep, cool. Give me those three one more time, Paul. The role of Loop for our merchants.
Yeah, sorry, it was a bit of a mouthful. So the average role, how the typical journey looks for the end customer, and then how does the, in fact, I'll ask the integration one separately. Cover the first two first.
So the role of Loop, if it's useful, right, we certainly sit in the merchant's technology stack, and I'll talk through the lens of a Shopify merchant today. I would say we are closer in comparison to your warehouse management system, your ERP system like NetSuite and like Shopify in itself, than we are to a marketing automation platform or like a Klaviyo or an Attentive or even a Gorgeous. And when I say that, just for context, what I'm talking about is kind of the depth of integration. We need to see product and see inventory levels. So we're deeply integrated, woven into order management, inventory management, advanced shipment notifications in warehouses. You know, we have something like 40 or 50 third-party logistics provider warehouse management system integrations. So we're kind of deeper in the technology stack, a little bit more of an operational, maybe an investment. But we are, you know, the role it plays is really maybe two or threefold. What's most obvious is that we are a consumer-facing portal. So if you're at Brooklinen or Tecovas or Allbirds or Chubbies and you scroll down to the footer in the help section or the customer service section and you go to returns, whether there's a landing page there before that or not, what you ultimately hit is our white labeled hosted software that makes it really easy to exchange an item. And this may be in the weeds, but we think about a couple different parts of that journey. So now I'm maybe getting to the second question and I'll come back to the rest of the role of Loop. But that journey is sort of like, for whatever reason, the product has disappointed the shopper. It hasn't met their expectations, whether that's a size and a fit or a color or a style or whatever. That's what happens. And we sort of walk the shopper through a couple scenarios. The first is the right brand, the right time, the right product, and the wrong variant, so size or color. And in that case, we make it really simple and streamlined to inline, get the right variant. Then sort of just from a mental model perspective, then it's sort of like right brand, right time, wrong product. And so we, whether it's through our on-store API or our native sort of shopping experience in Loop, we make it possible for the shopper to basically shop the merchant's entire catalog and find a product that they are going to love. From there, you might get to, it might still be the right brand, but it might be the wrong time, in which case you get a gift card or store credit. And then the last, obviously, is wrong brand. The shopper just decides that they don't want it and they get a refund. And then all through that journey, whether it's bonus credit, our shop now sort of shopping functionality, we have something called shop later that I won't, you know, get into the details of specifically here, but you know, we try to create incentives, economic incentives and behavioral incentives to exchange for a different product and help retain that customer relationship for the merchant. So that's sort of the journey and the first role of Loop. The second role of Loop is a tool. So we have a merchant facing admin, not unlike logging into Shopify and seeing your visitors and your revenue and all that sort of stuff, where I would say there are two sort of vignettes there. One is the CX team and the customer experience team and making sure that Loop is sort of set up properly, that you've got all of the right benefits and features working for you. And then the second audience is maybe a little bit more operations, a little bit more finance, a little bit more merchandising based, which is a deep BI layer to the tool. And it's something we build in Looker and make Looker dashboards available to our merchants and continuously invest in, you know, helping them understand performance of products and performance of customers and stuff like that. And then the last role of Loop and where we, you know, it's kind of a third champion for us is warehouse operators. So we, you know, if you think of a merchant's relationship with the 3PL and how 3PLs are structured, they are massively optimized for outbound shipments. You place an order and we want to get those orders out fast and get them to customers. What they still have to do though is take in returns. And that's usually a painful process for the 3PL and a painful process for the operators there. And then obviously because it's painful there, there's a premium charged to the merchants to take in those returns. And there's a real time lag to getting products that do come back in returns back on shelf so that they can be sold. We think of that through the lens of inventory yield. And there's basically a time lag and a data lag where all of the data that merchants help work with their 3PLs to gather about the quality and contents of returns coming back, that, you know, historically is kind of a black box or a silo in the 3PL that doesn't get back to the merchant and their e-commerce platform. And so we're kind of taking that back. But we, you know, help those warehouse operators also understand what's coming back, what they should expect in the boxes that they open. And we reduce some of the pain for 3PLs in their teams, which then in turn reduces some of the cost and the burden for the merchant and helps them restock items more quickly. So in short, I guess when I think of role of Loop, there's the shopper experience, which is the white label platform. There's the administrative experience for CX and operating teams. And then there's the warehouse experience. And that's sort of the three roles that we play in our merchants' lives day to day.
Attract, your complete product discovery growth engine. Create relevant shopping experiences that convert into sales and grow online revenue with personalized search, merchandising, and recommendation solutions powered by AI. Find out more at attract.com.
Great. And you mentioned kind of the relationship that Loop has with back office systems there and things like 3PLs. And I'd imagine there'll be some other pieces kind of factoring into that BI layer of reporting. What does the average integration look like? And so across both that side and then the e-com platform.
Yeah, so where my mind goes first is goodness, what does Glenn at Shopify call it? They Shopify does this thing they talk about progressive disclosure, where if you think about their product, Shopify plays from like SMB all the way up to these enterprise merchants, right? And so progressive disclosure is like, if you put all the features and functionality that enterprise merchants need in front of those SMB merchants, that would be like overwhelming and a terrible experience. And so we still have some work to do in building some of that progressive disclosure. But I bring that up because, we do serve your SMB merchants, doing a $500,000 in sales, all the way up to your largest merchants on Shopify doing hundreds of millions in sales. And the integrations look relatively different based on those ideal customer profiles or those merchant cohorts. As you might expect, a smaller merchant, call it $1 million GMV merchant, they may not yet have a 3PL, a third-party logistics provider. They may be filling their own orders. And that is, really an integration that is almost purely to Shopify and can be stood up. And, you could go from your time to live, so to speak, could be 24 hours or less. 24 hours or less is a little bit of an anomaly for Loop, where, there's a little bit of, in the Shopify world, if something's called an app, you expect that you can install it from the App Store and be live in minutes. I wouldn't call Loop an app. I would call it software. And it's a subtle nuance, but that software has some white glove installation support, making sure that your policies are set up, making sure that we are consuming your product tags to figure out what is returnable, what should be refundable, all that sort of stuff. But a pretty lightweight integration just with Shopify for smaller merchants. And then as merchants' businesses grow and get more specialized and get more complex, and maybe you outsource fulfillment, then I would say the next level of complexity in integration. So like first is like just a Shopify integration and some policies. Next, it kind of becomes you have a third-party logistics provider, and we need to be doing at least a one-way integration, which is from Loop to the warehouse, letting them know what items they can expect coming back. And typically what that is, there's a whole lot of, sometimes it's flat file, it can be all sorts of things, but it's like the advanced shipment notification. ASN is sort of the industry term. The next level of complexity is like closing the loop, so to speak, but not just the integration from Loop to the warehouse management system or the 3PL, but a bi-directional integration that brings data from that dispositioning moment, that triage moment in the warehouse back to Loop. So that we can, for example, automate a refund and get that refund back to the customer when it's processed at the warehouse and the shirt that was sent back in a large is, in fact, a shirt that we sent back in a large. So that's sort of like one, and then 2A and 2B levels of complexity and integration. And then the third is when we really start to get integrated into a NetSuite, so to speak, or your ERP system. Roughly, we talk about a sales cycle as 30 days plus or minus. And I would say we talk about the post-sale go live as maybe 45 days plus or minus. And on the long side, those can be 75 days. And on the short side, they can be 24 hours. And what I would say is you know, I mentioned I've done brand side and agency side. I certainly come from sort of a service provider mentality. And so one, we don't charge for integration and setup. And two, our team is very hands-on and it's a very high touch experience. So we try to make that as simple, streamlined and painless for merchants as possible.
And you've talked through like a few of the facets from the customer experience, the operational side. I'd love to hear what are you finding most merchants are coming to you to have solved? Is it operational efficiency and process? Because a lot of the SMEs, I guess I'm talking more about SMEs now, of the SMEs, they don't have mature processes and they don't have connectivity. Mm-hmm. Is that what most people are using Loop to fix? Or is it down to like commercials trying to reduce the cost of managing returns?
Yeah. I would say on the software side, it is certainly you could almost call it like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like the foundational need on the bottom of the hierarchy, at the bottom of the pyramid, is like automation. So how do we just reduce the manual labor and both shopper manual labor? How do we make it easy and streamlined and automated for a shopper? And then how do we also streamline and automate the processes for our teams? How do we make sure that someone doesn't have to log into Shopify every time there's a return and issue a refund or post an exchange order? So baseline sort of foundationally, it's automation. And then up from there on the product side, it starts to be personalization or optimization. For example, Loop's built on like a workflows engine. And so based on different customer, product, and order criteria, you can route different destinations and outcomes. So think of it as almost like an if this, then that logic. If shopper is X, product is Y, order is Z, then send this back to my 3PL, send it to my donations warehouse, use the least expensive shipping method possible. It's an item that's going to sell through quickly. I want to get it back on the shelf quickly. Let me get it back to the warehouse more quickly. So there's sort of that logic, sort of optimization engine. But from a, you know, those are sort of features. And I guess where my mind goes next, James, and you kind of mentioned, is like, what is the pain or the problem merchants are asking us to solve? And it is sort of foundationally automation. But if you sort of compare, I'd almost draw a line in the sand at like March of 2022. Prior to March of 2022, almost unanimously, what our merchants were focused on was, how do we drive exchanges? How do we drive lifetime value? How do we create repeat purchase, get those customers back, make them happy? And I think, you know, we could, I won't dive into it, but we could spend hours talking about just changes in supply chain economics, macroeconomic headwinds, all that sort of stuff. And what's become a lot more front and center for merchants, I think, is a critical problem to address, is just the cost of returns. And so, you know, at a very simple unit economic level, you know, merchants are looking for things that maybe weren't on their radar in 2020 and 2021, like we call them kind of returnless refunds. If there's not a reason for us to get this product back and incur the $7 shipping charge and the $6 handling fee in the warehouse and add $13 of cost to my business, can I just let the shopper keep the item and save that $13? Or can I really optimize the shipping method and the time and all that sort of stuff? And so the cost of returns is far more front and center for merchants, you know, these last 12, 15 months than it was prior. And maybe fortunately for Loop, we can kind of do both of those things, drive the repeat purchase, the retention, the lifetime value, the sort of growth side. And we can be really dialed in on the unit economics and cost savings side for our merchants.
Hypersonix helps e-commerce companies make more profit every day. This AI-driven platform delivers recommendations for pricing and inventory that lead to bigger profits. Visit hypersonix.ai/podcast to get a free trial.
Right. And I guess the next question, so you've touched on exchanges a few times, and I think that's been a big selling point for Loop for quite a while, and it's a big topic of discussion for a lot of brands at the moment. I guess my question is, how many people make use of this feature? I think one of the things that I've seen is, you talked earlier about the role of back office in returns, and the thing that I've seen is everyone wants exchanges. Everyone really buys into it and sees the value, particularly when, you know, you start talking about incentives and stuff like that. But one of the issues is, particularly in the Shopify world, that back office side, and how the order is represented, how the return is represented, etc. And also reconciliation, everything around that kind of flow. How much of an issue is that for you, and how do people get around it, or how much of a how much of a block?
Great question. And I'll, you know, it's sort of like, how do we make sure returns and how do we make sure exchanges work and don't break the business for it? Like, how do we make sure that the cost of and I would say cost, like complexity, data, integrity of revenue, orders, all that sort of stuff. How do we make sure that cost isn't too much of a deterrent for merchants to get the benefit? You know, Shopify's been a great partner to me and to Loop from day one. A thing that I tell our team often about Shopify is, you know, if Shopify has not given you a way to do a thing, Shopify is a remarkably flexible partner. Once they give you a way to do a thing, that flexibility goes to almost zero, and you're expected to behave in accordance with those expectations. And so I say that in the context of, prior to 2021, there was no such thing as a returns API or an exchanges API in Shopify. So if you just think about that from a data perspective, there was no object that is a return on an order or an exchange of an item or an order. That infrastructure just did not exist. So we have gotten creative. We've built our own completely standalone financial ledger in design partnership with some of our best merchants to make sure that we're accounting for exchanges, refunds, et cetera, in a way that works for merchants, from a revenue recognition, revenue reconciliation, timing perspective. We've kind of built all of that. We also built our own relationship between an order and an exchange so that merchants can see that this this order placed over here, this exchange is related to this original order, and these maybe three exchanges are related. And that was a lot of, honestly, working around limitations. You know, we did take investment from Shopify in 2021 as part of our Series B fundraise. And since then, we've been fortunate enough to be a design partner and help Shopify build a returns API that is now in sort of public use, and is something that Loop is consuming and is a leader in. But there still is not yet an exchanges API. To Paul, maybe your point around sort of complexity and back office. Similarly, we are a design partner on that exchanges API. I would be misspeaking if I were attempting to speak to like timing of when Shopify will release that exchanges API and when we will start consuming it and when merchants will no longer have to like rely on Loop to handle this financial ledger and this revenue recognition and reconciliation. So I can't speak to it specifically, but if I were a betting man, you know, less than 12 months from now, we will be the first and leading sort of consumer of that exchanges API and making sure that we, you know, we in partnership with Shopify make merchants successful and simplify their lives and get rid of all the sort of workarounds that are required to make exchanges happen. All of that context aside, from a Loop product perspective, there is no version of Loop that does not offer exchanges. So 100% of Loop's merchants offer exchanges in all scenarios. And then depending on how that's set up, it can be sort of just varied exchanges or full catalog exchanges. And we have things like advanced exchanges, same price exchanges, instant exchange, stuff like that. And merchants opt in and out of some of that sort of enhanced functionality. But at the base level, 100% of the time, if you are returning a product, you can get a different size or color of that item.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think in my experience, quite a few of our clients have got it working, and you know, they've put those workarounds in place, or you know, if they've got their own, I mean, it's usually like a kind of native connector or the ERP that's the issue.
Yep.
I think clients have got a bit more flexibility on that side, have made it work fine. And then, you know, if you're using maybe Brightpearl and the kind of their connector, it's a bit harder. But yeah, I think I'm sure that'll get easier over time. And sticking on that kind of exchanges piece, how many of your customers that do it, how many of them are incentivizing it. So I saw a really nice example in fashion a while ago. My fiance, I was just watching her screen and she'd bought something. She'd gone through a repair process and she took 120% of the value as store credit, which I was quite impressed by. This was a while ago and I've seen it a few more times since. Have you seen demand around this increasing? And is it something that a lot of your customers do?
So yes. Sometimes I think like accuracy and precision, and I think I could probably give very light, you know, maybe 60 or 70% directionally correct accuracy here. The majority of our merchants offer these incentives. We call it bonus credit. What is true, speaking of like just a shortcoming of Loop for sure, and something we're aggressively working on from like a product innovation perspective is, you know, we expect right now today in Loop as a merchant, you're expected to be intelligent and the decision maker around what to offer in terms of bonus credit. And bonus credit is, sometimes I think of like smart and dumb features. Bonus credit is a dumb feature in Loop today. A person sets it and it is globally true sort of all the time. Where we're headed is trying to make that a smart feature, and smart on two fronts. One is being able to help a merchant sort of try to understand where they should set it. And then if they would like to actually automate setting that return credit, that bonus credit, through the lens of like, if there's a marginal return curve, this is my academic sort of economics days, but what we really want to do is help merchants offer the minimum amount of bonus credit required to achieve the maximum change in behavior from refund to exchange. And with the volume of returns we're processing, you know, almost 2 million a month right now, we should be able to, based on everything we see about the value of exchanges coming, the order level value and the item level value of exchanges coming back, we should be helping merchants set the optimal bonus credit level. And then one of the other things we don't do a great job of is actually highlighting the impact of that bonus credit in terms of like positive behavior change for the shopper. And those are two areas where, I don't know, candidly, we're not serving our merchants and making them successful as well and as strongly as we should today. And so, you know, that's a big focus of product innovation for us in the future is kind of making those features smart and making the value they're delivering clearer and more easily consumable, understandable for our merchants.
I like that. I mean, the whole point of incentivizing people to keep the money within the business by giving them something of value ties back to the customer experience element you were talking about earlier. And I've got a question related to that, which is, you know, some people I've worked with over the years have struggled with just a de facto returns process where everything gets sent back to the same 3PL, whether it's, 3PL or their own warehouse.
Yep.
And the time and effort to receive it back in, unpack it, decide what to do with it, move it on. For some items where the cost of them is so tiny, do you find, are many of your customers using like any of your automation, your rules-based capabilities to basically say to customers, you don't want it, it's fine, you don't have to return it, you can just keep it, because the cost of returning it doesn't justify the money they can make out of having that returned item?
Yeah, totally, James. We call that returnless refunds, and it certainly was like pioneered by Kalo, for example, who does silicon wedding rings. We hope to be going. We'll be going live with Bombas socks here shortly, and they'll be using returnless refunds as well. But in short, yes, we can offer that, and what we're starting to do, and if you were to ask me like the envisioned future I have for Loop, the volume and cost of returns back at the warehouse is just remarkably high in terms of the pain it causes for our merchants and for 3PLs. And so, you know, we've got today what are called destinations, and it's you know, very simply saying, if these conditions are met, route to a donations warehouse or to a 3PL or do the returnless refund. And a major area of product investment for us is kind of moving, I call it like dynamic routing, But instead of, you know, getting an item back to a warehouse and asking a merchant and their warehouse team to figure out what to do with that item there, basically pulling that routing upstream into what Loop does today and being really, really high efficacy in routing those returns where they should go, and not even like basically having a layer of artificial intelligence that helps decide when to let a shopper keep that item, when to route it to a donation center, when to take it to sort of a discount channel or a liquidation channel, whether that's Arrive or Trove or whatever the case may be. But that is a big part of the vision for the future is, you know, we've kind of solved the returns management problem, so to speak, or in the reverse logistics world, they call that returns initiation. What we haven't solved and what is a big pain for all modern brands is returns dispositioning or returns triage, basically what to do with that item when you get it back. And we want to, yes, solve that in the warehouse and with warehouse partners and with partners like Toboxes, but also we want to pull that the solution to that problem up into the software we already have and basically you know, stop the problem before it starts, so to speak, is where we hope to take that.
Thanks for listening to the episode. We hope you enjoyed it and got lots of decent takeaways from Jonathan's insight on e-commerce returns. Stay tuned this week because we're dropping a second episode on Thursday where we follow up with Jonathan to discuss customer experience considerations for your return strategy. Thanks very much. Speak to you soon. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.